Hey guys, and welcome to our third underrated minisode. I'm your host, Gabriel Green. So we make these minisodes so we can just join in the fun of discussing new releases or other films that don't necessarily fit into the underrated mold. Today we're reviewing the latest installment in J.K. Rowling's Potterverse, or the world of Harry Potter. It's Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. James is not with me today, since he hasn't read the Harry Potter series, and I think that's something he should be publicly ashamed for. Don't you agree, TJ?
I do agree. Anybody who's not read the Harry Potter series, or certainly, at the very least, not familiar with the movies, shame on them. Shame.
Absolutely. And so I brought on TJ Draper of Recast to help me discuss this film. How are you doing, TJ?
I'm doing well. How are you, Gabriel?
I'm doing pretty good, too. So you want to tell us a bit about yourself before we get going?
Yeah, so most people, if you're listening to podcasts and if you like movie podcasts, you may or may not be familiar with the Movie Bite podcast. That was a podcast that I did with Joe Darnell for something like 2.5 years. Well, I did it with Joe Darnell, and then he left for a while due to personal things going on in his life, and I had Chad Hopkins come and host it with me, and I believe he's been on this show or the minisode or something like that.
Yeah,
we
had him on for our Prince of Persia episode.
Yes. So I hadn't gotten to listen to that one yet. In fact, anyway. And so then Joe came back and we did Movie Bite for another 50 episodes with Joe. And so there's 150 episodes of Movie Bite out there. And now we've started a new podcast called Retake on nightowl.fm. That's a network that Joe and I are trying to get started. And so we have a couple of podcasts out there now on it, and we're hoping to bring more into the fold soon. So nightowl.fm is where you'll find me podcasting these days.
Yep, and I can affirm that both of his podcasts are quite good. Definitely worth checking out.
Thank you.
All right. I'll let you just read the brief synopsis from IMDb before we get into the review.
Sure. Okay. So Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. This film is about the adventures of writer Newt Scamander in New York's secret community of witches and wizards 70 years before Harry Potter reads his book in school.
All right. So you're the guest, so I'll let you start out. What did you think of this movie?
I loved this movie, Gabriel. Here's the thing. I've been a big fan of the 7-book story arc that J.K. Rowling came up with the Harry Potter series. And the movies are lesser creations or lesser versions of those stories, and my love is for the books. The movies are fine to varying degrees, but the books, and specifically Jim Dale reading those books, it's just phenomenal. And so I loved those books, and I've been wanting more stories in this universe. And I got to tell you, the play, what was the name of that play that came out?
The Cursed Child.
The Cursed Child. That I'm just, I don't know, that's just not really doing it for me.
I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah, I mean, my wife has like the screenplay and everything, and I've read bits and pieces of it, and I just can't get into it. I can't read screenplays. They're meant to be screenplays, and so they're not meant to be read like that. Yeah. In any event, I've really looked forward to something more in the Harry Potter universe, and what I really kind of wanted was something after Harry Potter, maybe something with Harry's children or one of his children that we saw at the very end of book 7, or something more in that nature. However, Fantastic Beasts seems to have scratched the itch, even though it has nothing to do with Harry Potter necessarily. There are elements, obviously, we're in the magical world. We are events that are going to directly lead to the rise of Voldemort and these sorts of things. So I really enjoyed that sort of angle. And I was a little skeptical when I first heard the announcement of this film. I'm like, okay, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. How good can this be? But it kind of turns out that title is kind of a ruse. Like it's not really tangentially. I mean, the guy is going to write the book, and he's kind of got a thing for magical beasts, magical creatures. But that's not really what this film is about. So I definitely enjoyed this film, and I'm really looking forward to seeing where they're going to go with the next 4 films.
Yeah, I basically agree with everything you said. Yeah, I only recently came into the fandom about 2 years ago, but it's been pretty all-consuming since then for me. And I agree about the movies. I think I kind of look at the films, all but maybe one or two of them, as simply companion pieces to the books. Since J.K. Rowling's books are so incredibly dense, there's no way to fit all the details and wonderful character moments. And so it's kind of just a greatest hits of the stories. So, I love them all, all but one. I'll get Yeah. And so it's a great series. And I think that's where this film actually has a bit of an advantage over the other books or the other films, to where this is written directly for the screen. And so J.K. Rowling is kind of forced to funnel the way she funnel her creative writing style into a screenplay. And that way it doesn't feel like we're only getting bits and pieces of a greater story. It feels, I think in the case of this film, that we did get a complete and total story that was satisfying in of itself, that didn't feel like it was missing parts. And I think while it's not necessarily my favorite film in this part in the Potterverse, I think it might just be the strongest narratively of all of them.
I would definitely agree with that. And I think what we're seeing is we have Rowling writing the screenplays, which she didn't get to do with any of the previous films. Like, obviously, she wrote the source material, and then they adapted her source material, the books, into screenplays, and they had varying degrees of success with that. Movie 4. In this one, she is crafting the story from start to finish, and yes, she's also crafting it to be a movie, so that's an advantage, but she's also able to put the important parts, the parts that she thinks are important, on the screen. So that's also an advantage. And then we also don't have anything to compare it to. We don't know that there are better things out there. We don't have the story in book form. And I did, my wife and I both, after we came out of the film, said, boy, this would make a phenomenal book. but we don't have the book there. So it's not like we're going, oh, well, man, Yeats really kind of messed this part, you know, like when we were with some of the other movies. But
yeah.
But that's not there for this. And so that's an advantage that this film has as well.
Yeah. And I think, though, she did bring her very distinctive storytelling structural style to the film, to where,
oh, yes,
it feels, the stories are kind of rambling at the beginning, and you see like little hints of the darkness and the larger whole here and there, and slowly just builds and weaves together these different threads until it all kind of comes together in a climax. And that's the style she writes just about all her books in, and it is present in the film. So it did feel very familiar to the world she's created.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's funny, she has that, you're right about that style. And that style is kind of twofold. One, in the individual stories, they kind of lay down all these threads that get picked up later, and they kind of weave into a tapestry of something good. But then she does it with the overall series as well, where all these threads and things that you think may not, they're just fun little tidbits, it turns out they're important later, and they weave into this fantastic tapestry of an overarching story throughout the whole series. And I think we're going to get that with Fantastic Beasts. I don't even know where to look yet, but a lot of them, I feel like there's lots of little threads that have been laid out that we're going to get in later films. And we already know there's going to be at least four more films. They said originally trilogy, and now they're saying there's going to be five films according to the story that she's kind of structured out. So that's going to be a lot of fun to pick up.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into specifics. Are there any, what are some things you liked about this movie?
Well, so some things that I liked, I thought that the creatures were all really well done, well conceived, well animated, CGI wise, like just a lot of the stuff that you had visually in your head from the books, or maybe were just even alluded to, like the Niffler and things like that. Like, you get to see them on screen, and they all, like, without, I don't think there was anything that I was like, oh, that's not the way I conceived of that creature. Even if they were a little different from what I had in my head, you're like, yes, that's that creature. That makes sense. Like, we got to see an Irrumpant, like the Irrumpant horn was a big deal in book 7 when they're finding out about the Deathly Hallows, and it basically allowed them to escape because it exploded. And now we get to see why, like, all that's going, you know, how that works on the actual Irrumpant. So that was fun. The magical creatures were fantastic. This is another thing that I really liked about this film is the magic of the wizards and the witches are, it's very mature and adult. We're not dealing with the Hogwarts learning, you know, how to deal with magic and how to cast spells and how to do this and that. We're not children learning about it anymore. We're in an adult wizarding community now. Where we never really got a lot of that. We got some of it, but not a lot of it in the Harry Potter series. And so I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, and speaking of the Niffler, I liked how this film kind of assumes you know what's going. You've at least seen some of the films, and it was kind of funny. Like when the creature came out, they didn't name it till like 10-15 minutes into the film.
Oh yeah,
and I was like, I know what that is. I know what that is. I felt like kind of Captain America. I understood that reference, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it was really fun. And so I definitely enjoyed seeing that creature that we've read about back in like Goblet of Fire, to see that on screen. I loved that entire sequence in the bank. I think Yates doesn't get enough credit for just how good he is at comedy. And I think his style of comedy is very similar to Rowling's. I think it rarely gets goofy and over the top. It's, I wouldn't say necessarily say subtle, but it's all very clever comedy. And just with the Niffler, how it just stuffs all this crazy amounts of gold into its little pouch. And when Newt was trying to hang it upside down and get all the gold out of it, it's just a really funny sequence.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what the Niffler does, right? He goes for shiny, you know, gold and silver and all that kind of stuff. And I think you're right. Yates' strength, he has some weaknesses, which I'll get to a little later when we talk about things we didn't like. But I think Yates' strength is to figure out the right comedic moments. I mean, just think of the sixth movie and how he had the kind of the comedic moments going on with Harry and the book from the Half-Blood Prince and making some of those potions and just the way he put together the part where Harry took the Felix Felicis. Like he has that timing, that comedic sense that really works well for these films. And he definitely brought it again here for Fantastic Beasts.
Yeah. And one of the things I think my favorite aspect of this film, I think, is the cast and characters we get.
Yes.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say this might be the best set of characters we've had in a film, of lead characters. And this is nothing against the trio. I think, like, Radcliffe, Watson, and Grint, they're all fantastic. But as I mentioned earlier, the way the books were adapted, they had to put so much time into just squeezing in the plot that there wasn't always enough time to satisfactorily develop them as fully fledged characters in the films. And so they kind of relied on our knowledge of the books to fill in the blanks of their characters. And here we don't have that. I think every one of these characters we have in this film, they feel like fully fledged human beings. And it probably helps that these are much more experienced actors than the younger cast was. And just the first one, Newt, played by Eddie Redmayne, Jupiter Ascending, I lost a little bit of faith in Redmayne as an actor, but this one fully restored my faith in him.
I liked him in Jupiter Ascending.
I don't know what he was doing. It's just bizarre.
That's fair. I mean, it was definitely a choice, you know, but...
Yeah. Yeah, but this one, he plays this really wonderful, complex character and of like a deeply awkward person who just doesn't know how to relate to people. I think they might have been going for maybe like a mild autism or something. But, and so I think he played that really well. It's just, he doesn't know how to connect with people. And so throughout the film, we see his arc as he just slowly learns to open up and bring in friends where he meets the character, the muggle or nomad character of, Kowalski. And I love their relationship. I think the relationship is just adorable throughout the movie, how see this character just kind of open up and become more human. And also, Catherine Waterston, I've never seen her before in anything, but she really blew me away here. She plays a character similar, who is also kind of awkward and doesn't really fit in. You can see she's trying to get ahead in the world, but like there's a bunch of circumstances that keep holding her back. And she's a really great match for Newt's character. I think they work really well together.
Yeah, I completely agree. I pretty much agree with everything that you just said. I didn't have any problem with Eddie Redmayne in Jupiter Ascending. And but that aside, you know, Newt Scamander, Eddie Redmayne, I mean, that was just the perfect casting choice for the character that he turned out to be. Of course, we didn't really know what kind of a person he was, but whatever it was, Eddie Redmayne fit it perfectly, you know. And I loved seeing him do that part. Now, you mentioned that you think he might be somewhat autistic, and I read that in a couple of different places as I was looking around, poking around online for what people thought of this film. And reviews are a little bit mixed, by the way. But one of them definitely mentioned that they felt like he He was somewhere on the spectrum of autism, and that's interesting. I didn't think about it in the film, but you know, he definitely had that. He would barely make eye contact, and definitely I've been you know, fortunate to be around some people that were on the spectrum in my life, and this definitely, maybe there's a tinge of that there. That was kind of an interesting way to play Newt, so that was good. You know, Tina was, you know, like you said, just fantastic, just a perfect character. You could tell the conflict going on. They didn't need to say much about what the conflict was. You kind of could tell that she'd had some bad, rough times at, let's see, not the ministry, the Magical Congress.
Makuza.
yeah. And, you know, and then, oh man, I love including I've almost said Muggle, a Nomad character in like he feels so primary to the story, and it's so obvious that these four, Newt, Tina, Queenie, and Kowalski, they're going to be, you know, they're a team, and there's no doubt to me. Now, I suppose I could be wrong, but to me, it feels like these four are going to be in future stories in this timeline, this film establishment that we have here now.
Yeah, I hope so.
It's so great to include a Nomad. I have a lot more to say about this, but you know, the magical community has really treated Muggles just terribly. Just they don't treat them well at all. And I really love the kind of J.K. Rowling is kind of focusing in on that and shining a light on this issue. I guess I'll go ahead and just talk about it. I mean, there's some interesting allusions and comparisons in this film with racism. You know, and the magical community feels much more forward-thinking, I suppose, in terms of color and gender and that sort of thing. You know, certainly in the 20s, you know, you have this woman president of the Magical Congress at a time when a woman president? That's just unheard of. And it's that's not a big deal at all to these magical people in the magical community. And same with color of skin, like a black woman was president of the Magical Congress. But then you get into these issues of Muggle versus, you know, or I'm sorry, magical versus Nomad. And it's like, there's the racism. There it is right there. That's how the magical community is racist. And it's just very interesting how Rowling has kind of weaved that into the story in a way that makes complete sense.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, I noticed that in this film, we see house elves and goblins carrying wands. And I think there's just touches like that, which is just, there's no attention brought to them. But they're just there for people to point out. I love how Yeats and Rowling, they just really subtly built the world in a way that respects the audience. It doesn't just keep calling attention to itself. We just have to watch. And I think that's interesting where you have a country like America that doesn't have all the old wizarding houses with their slave house elves. So right. Anyone that would be there would be free. And it seems that the world we're given in America is far less, it's far less traditional as than we see in England.
Yeah, but also, it's more new world and not as much steeped in the old world the way as you would expect. And when people come to the United States, what do they come for? They come to be free. They come for freedom. At least that's the idea, right? That's the idea of the United States, whether it's true or not. And so when the house elves come here, they're like, freedom, you know, that's kind of the idea. And the goblins. And so it makes so much sense. And the laws and the rules are different. I mean, all they had to do was point out early on in the film, Nomad, what's that? Oh, we call them Muggles. And that was it. That's all you needed. And then the subtle details, you're like, oh, that's different in America. That's different in America. I loved it.
Yeah, and I've heard a lot of people complaining about how dumb the term Nomad is. But I think it's actually kind of brilliant.
It sounds very American to me.
Yeah, especially from an English author, kind of pointing out just how boring and utilitarian Americans can be. And just how ultra literal they are. And while I definitely prefer Muggle, I think it's a very clever way of poking fun at how Americans actually think and work.
Yeah, totally. No, I was totally on board with it. I thought it was great.
Yeah. I can't believe neither of us have mentioned him, but Dan Fogler as Jacob Kowalski. I mean, he's so adorable as a character. And for most of the film, he plays kind of a comic relief, but he does bring a lot of heart to this character. And I was tearing up toward the end from what happens to his character.
Well, this is the way comic relief should be played. I mean, it's, yes, your comic relief characters need to be in movies. You need to have some comic relief. Typically, you don't want your movies to be so dreary and weighed down. But you want your comic relief characters to be characters. I mean, you don't want them to, I'm very sorry. I've listened to you talk praise Lord of the Rings, but you don't want them to be Gimli, okay? I can't stand Gimli in the movies. It's terrible. And you don't want your comic relief to be that. And this is how comic relief should be done. Please take note, directors around the world. What you do is it's a great subversive tool to make them comic relief, and you're not really paying too much attention to them, and then all of a sudden they steal the tears out of your eyes when it comes time, you know. And that was the way this character worked so well. It was so well done.
Yeah. Instead of Gimli, he's Merry and Pippin.
Yeah.
The way they grow and come into their own in the later films.
Yeah, that could work. I have trouble with Merry and Pippin too, but not nearly as much as Gimli. But
okay,
but yeah.
We'll have words later on that.
You can kick me off your podcast now. I really loved kind of the pairing of couples in this film. Like, so Newt and Tina, obviously there's some stuff going on that we're not going to we're probably going to have to address, and it probably will become important to the story with the Lestranges, or Lestrange as they say in the movie, and with Lita Lestrange, that somehow Newt is involved there. But at least for this movie, you kind of see the pairing up of Newt and Tina and they're so wonderful together, and especially the scene at the end, they just have such chemistry and it works so well together. And then, you know, Kowalski and Tina's sister Queenie, like that whole thing. And in fact, I kind of have to talk about this when we get to dislikes, but just I loved them in throughout the movie and kind of the chemistry that they had as well. So I really love that about this film. It was just great.
Yeah, I had some issues with the character of Queenie, but I'll get into that later. But yeah,
she's a very conflicted kind of a character. Well, not conflicted is the wrong word. She's She definitely has some growing up to do. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Another positive for me, I think, as I said before, I think Yates, he works really well with Rowling. And that's also not only because he can do humor, but also I think he has a way of mixing really great humor and also extremely dark material in a way that doesn't feel tonally inconsistent. And that's very difficult to do, but he somehow does it. And I think you need that to do a J.K. Rowling story, because she likes to go dark as well. And
yeah, it's interesting because this film definitely goes dark. And for the in a way, it's like, because it's following up on stuff that we, you know, where the Harry Potter series got progressively darker in each book, and certainly took a real turn dark in book 4 or movie 4, whichever you want to go for. And it definitely took that turn when Voldemort appears on the scene. But, you know, then you're expecting, okay, well, this is the first in a series of 5 films, and so this will probably be a little lighter. And that's really not the case. This film has some very dark overtones going on, and you know it's only going to get darker with can we spoil? Can we say spoilers?
Yeah, let's just call spoilers now. There's a lot
spoilers
of stuff to talk
now.
About.
So with Grindelwald on the scene, there's definitely going to be some dark times coming. I feel like the culmination of this story, this is speculation, but I would bet the culmination of the story is going to be a duel between Dumbledore and Grindelwald, the famous one in 1945. Mm-hmm. I think it's 1945. So that's coming, but we're already starting off in a dark kind of a place with this film, because, you know, people died and there's just some dark stuff going on here. The whole child abuse thing, oh man, it got very dark.
Yeah, and I think, and it's not just in what in the like the in moments in the film. I think there's the whole tone. What we see in America in New York at this time period, it's very gloomy. There's the whole Wizarding Society seems to be very much on edge, and it's very intentional. And I think the government was almost like borderline fascist in certain elements.
Oh man!
And I think that was very interesting, and it felt very different from the more charming, goofy portrayal she had of government in the Harry Potter series, well, in the earlier books. But you really get, it feels like almost like the McCarthy era, or like the Red Scare time period, where everything is on edge and it feels dark, like they're on the brink of war. And you see like all these regulations and rules, and there's like I keep saying dark, but it is. It's very almost morbid in a way.
Well, you have, and this is where I almost had a, like, I could kind of take issue with this. It's like, you know, Graves orders the death of two people. They call it the Magical Congress, right? And you're in the United States of America, so it's like super offensive to the sensibilities for him to just say, kill these two people, and they take them in there, and they're just gonna dunk them in the death potion. Like, that's the end of it. And there's no trial, there's no nothing. And, like, that's so very dark.
I'm guessing that was probably illegal what he did, but yeah.
Oh, sure. But the people just went right along with it. Like, he'd obviously ordered this before, and they'd obviously carried out his orders before.
Yeah. And the entire sequence in the death chamber, just how they did it, where they just draw their memories and kind of play them before you. I guess it's supposed to be kind of a mercy, but it is so just creepy.
Oh, yeah. Very creepy. Very, like, they just pull out your memories and they're showing them to you. They're lulling you into this, yes, let's get in the nice potion, you know, like, ooh, whoa, man. Like I said, so dark.
Yeah, no, I personally, I'm a fan of when movies like this go dark. I've heard people complain about it, but I like it.
Oh, I'm not saying I'm taking issue with it at all. Yeah. I'm just saying it's not what I was expecting from a Fantastic Beast film.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, definitely not. I think I'll let you go. You got a positive now?
Let's see. I don't know that I have any more specifics. Let's see. I think I've touched on everything. Eddie Redmayne being perfect. Oh, the suitcase. We got to talk about the suitcase. I love that suitcase. It is so great. And you kind of know, especially when you see stuff coming in and out of it before you get a good look in it, that there's something special about the suitcase. He doesn't just have this thing stuffed in there. There's something going on. And we've seen these sorts of things before in Harry Potter, but nothing to this level. Like, he has a menagerie down there, and it's just so well done. And you know, most of it's CGI, and I just don't even care because it was just so great.
Yeah.
I just loved it.
Yeah, that was a really charming sequence down there.
Yeah, that's pretty much it on my likes. And I have a lot of general observations. There's a lot of potential for story that I guess that's a like, because I'm, you know, when they announce it's going to be a trilogy and then they expand it into five, and then my first reaction is, please do not do a Hobbit on us, because that would have been a great single movie and whatever. But, you know, this
we
is
also
like,
have to have words about that.
I know. But so please. But I don't feel like that's going to happen with this, because I feel like there's definitely story to tell here. There's a, you know, and just dangling Johnny Depp in front of us as Grindelwald at the very end. You're like, oh, you can't do that to us. We need to see more. We have to see more. And like I said, I think I mentioned this at the outset, and if I didn't, then I'll just say it again. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, you're kind of expecting, and there was a lot of magical creatures and stuff, but it's almost kind of a ruse. It's like, yeah, this is going to be about Newt Scamander and Fantastic Beasts and where you might find them, but not really. This is really the story we're going to tell, and there's so much more going on there. You know, so that's great. All the little touches that they like. Did you notice that the Americans hold their wands differently and use them far differently? Did you notice that? They almost hold them like, instead of pointing them and holding them with their palm up, it's almost like their palm is down. It's very, very interesting. I don't think there was an exception. Every American I saw holding a wand did that.
Huh. I just thought it was kind of personal quirks when I noticed just them holding them differently. I thought, kind of everybody holds the wands their own way. Huh. I didn't notice it that way.
Yeah. Maybe it's not, but I felt like that was just something they did in the Americans. In the Americans. That's a TV show. In the United States.
And speaking of Johnny Depp, what did you think of that reveal?
Well, so I started to suspect. Well, obviously, very early on, you get a sense that there's something foreboding going on with Graves, but you're not sure because you're just not sure where he's going. But it becomes apparent about halfway through the film that he's probably not a good guy. But then he sort of casts aside what's that character's name?
Credence.
Credence, yes. He kind of casts aside Credence and says, you're just a filthy squib. So first of all, there's two things there. First of all, he casts him aside. He didn't keep any promises to him. He has no care for him at all. So you're like, okay, this really is a bad dude. Secondly, he called him a squib. We've already established that in the United States, they don't use terms muggles and squibs. So you know right away he must be from Britain or something, because something's up there. So you start to suspect that something's going on. My first thought was he's in league with Grindelwald. It turns out, no, he's not just in league with Grindelwald. So I did not actually see the very final reveal coming when he says, you know, Newt Scamander says Revelio. Mm-hmm. I didn't see that one coming. But I had some suspicions that something with Grindelwald was going to come up.
Okay. Yeah. I think they gave away in the trailers that that Colin Farrell
was trying to avoid spoilers, so.
Yeah, I can't do that, but yeah, they kind of gave away in the trailers that there was something up with Colin Farrell, and I kind of wish they hadn't, because I like how he plays the character even in the beginning of the film. You really don't know if he's good or bad. And then I do like the reveal where he talks about the useless crazy flaming balls of death that come from the young wizards. What are they called?
You mean the Obscura?
Obscurus, yes, Obscurus. Yeah.
Obscurial.
Is Obscurus Obscurial?
I think the movie itself is a little confused about how to use it, because I thought that Obscurial was a plural of Obscura, but they mix that all up throughout the movie. But they definitely use both terms, and Obscurus sometimes too. So I'm not sure what the plural is and what the singular. Like, I was so confused.
Okay.
But anyway, in any event, Obscura, Obscurus, Obscurial, that thing.
Okay. Yeah, like when he talks about a useless Obscurus, and I think that's a really great reveal there. And I kind of wish it hadn't been spoiled by the trailers. But I was not at all expecting him to be an actual Grindelwald himself. And I wasn't paying as much attention as you were when he says squib, but that didn't even occur to me.
Yeah. Well, that was definitely when I thought, okay, there's definitely some connection back to Britain and probably Grindelwald. I definitely enjoyed the reveal. And I actually looked up pictures because I couldn't remember what Grindelwald looked like in the films. And I know they showed him both as young and old. And so I looked up I thought that the way they did Johnny Depp with the white hair and everything, I thought it looked like a good in-between stage, like exactly where you'd expect to find him between the two, the old and the young Grindelwald. So that works well. And then you just know with Johnny Depp that there's going to be some character to that character. I mean, mm-hmm. it's going to be great. And I can't wait to find out more about what's going on there.
Yeah, I definitely am interested to see what Johnny Depp does. Although I am really sorry we're not going to see Colin Farrell anymore. He plays a great bad guy.
Yeah, that's true. But there's nothing saying that he couldn't put that disguise back on and somewhere else. But I said he probably wouldn't, because he's kind of been found out. But we'll see.
Or actually, thinking about it, I'm assuming Graves was actually a real person who was part of the magical law enforcement in America.
That could be.
And I'm guessing, because obviously I don't think he put in 20 years of hard work to get into that position in the Makuza. So I'm assuming he stole the identity of somebody. So he could still be alive, and we could see him as a good guy. That'd be interesting too.
Yeah, we definitely could, and that would definitely be interesting. Oh, I meant to mention the other thing that kind of tipped me off that something interesting was going on with Graves is he was doing a lot of powerful magic without a wand, and we've already established that you have to be really good in order to do magic without a wand. That, you know, because the wand helps you channel and focus your magic, but in order to actually do stuff that's not channeled and focused through a wand, you have to have some special control, and he did that several times throughout the film. Now, I know that the films have kind of blurred that line, but certainly in the books, and knowing that Rowling wrote this, you know that certainly that's probably the intention.
Yeah. And one more thing before I move into dislikes. It's a really nerdy thing, but with the Obscurus, at first I was kind of annoyed that they were bringing in this new element of magic that was never spoken of in the Harry Potter books. But then actually thinking about it, I wonder if it's supposed to be whatever happened to... Is it Ariana Dumbledore?
Oh, yeah. That was my thought, is that the magic kept exploding out of her at times and she couldn't control it. And I immediately thought, oh, there must be some connection to what Ariana was going through.
Yeah, so it's a really clever bit of retconning that she did there. So I'm not nearly as annoyed by that new element as I was at first.
Yeah, I think it's definitely kind of a different take on that element. And the way you kind of explain that sort of stuff, I mean, even when she retconned some stuff later in the books of the Harry Potter series, what it wound up being was Dumbledore just wasn't telling Harry everything, or Harry was seeing it in a way that didn't quite make sense or whatever. So that all worked out. And I think this will work out fine. I'm fine if what they want to say is that Ariana went through some sort of obscurial thing. and that's what happened. I would be fine with that.
Yeah. All right. Do you have any anything else you want to mention before we move into our dislikes?
Let's see. I think that's pretty much it before we get to the dislikes.
All right. I'll start with that. I guess that my main issue with this is I wish the story had just been a little bit tighter. I don't think it's bad. I think it's fairly well told. I think all the pieces are in place for where the story goes. I think it works. But I think it could have been a little stronger if they had just some more connective tissue between Newt Scamander and Grindelwald that could have made the ending a bit more meaningful, where the film ends with him battling Grindelwald and stopping his whatever he has planned in New York. It would have been a bit more emotionally satisfying if there had been some actual connection rather than he just kind of ran into him.
Well, I wonder, I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you, but I do just want to counterpoint. I wonder if we're going to see some more of that connection in later films. I wonder if there's not some connection with Leta Lestrange and Grindelwald. I wouldn't be surprised to find out that Leta Lestrange had some connection or was involved with Grindelwald, because we know the Lestranges tend to be, you know, dark wizards. and so I wonder if there won't be some connection there, and that something like that didn't go down, and then that's what separated Newt and Leta. I think it's Leta. I hope I'm saying the right name.
I believe so. Yeah, the Zoe Kravitz character.
Yes.
Which I'm guessing we'll see a lot more of her if they've cast her. All right. Yeah. And as far as the story, that's really the only one I have. I do like the story. I think it's pretty well told. It's just I think it could have been slightly more emotionally connecting. Do you have any?
Yeah, so I really, really, really disliked the obliviating of Kowalski. I was so happy that he and maybe this is just me projecting my desire to live in the magical world as a wizard and not a muggle if this were a real thing. I really just hated that they felt like story-wise they had to obliviate him. I was even okay. In fact, what I thought might happen when the president said, oh, no exceptions, he has to be obliviated, that they might pull a fast one somehow and that not really obliviate him.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't do that, and they went ahead and obliviated him. Now there's possibly a hint at the end of the story that somehow maybe his memories are intact back in his head somewhere. I don't know. We'll have to see. But I hated it. Like I wanted him. He was so core to what was going on. He was so helpful. He was integrated into our team of four. I hated that they felt like, you know, that Rowling felt like he had to be obliviated. I hated that. And this goes back to the magical community really just treats muggles terrible or no mages. They're just so terrible to them. It's just awful.
Yeah.
I hated that.
Yeah. I would agree with you if this is the last we see of him, then yeah, I would agree with that. Though I do think we'll see him again. So as in the context of this story and what it says about the magical community and also what it says about his character, I did like that scene. I think it works in the context of the story that it's sad, but it's kind of the way the magical world works. And I love that scene in the end. And I think it really says a lot about his character, how he plays it. So I didn't mind, though I do really hope they bring him back. And from the way the ending scene played out, I'm guessing that he will be back in future films.
I would think so. He better, because he was so good. I loved him so much.
Yeah.
Okay, so killing Credence felt really incredibly, terribly dark. I mean, even for a magical community obsessed with protecting itself and elevating itself over that of others, like we have to maintain the secrecy and whatever, and even in the guise of protecting everyone else around them, just killing this kid who'd been through so much and was so repressed and abused as a child and all this stuff, and then all the aurors just killing him just felt so dark, and I don't think I liked it. I don't think I liked it. I would have liked some other resolution. Now, I was reading something where there's some hints that I didn't pick up on in the film, but there's some hints that apparently maybe he's not actually dead, and mm-hmm. that there's going to be some more focus on him. And what they said made sense, and I'm looking forward to seeing the film again so I could look for those hints.
Yeah, I'm sure about that, because I understand from the perspective of the government that yeah, this guy, he has killed people. And he just about tore apart the city, and for all intents and purposes, he's going to keep doing it. So I understand from the perspective of law enforcement that there might not have been another choice, but yeah, it definitely is dark.
Well, I think there was another choice because maybe this goes back to some of my views on other things, but you know, they come in, the situation seems to be under control, they're calming him down, there's ways that they're going to, once they get him calmed down, they can restrain him, but no, all of a sudden they just start firing, you know, blasts at him until he's apparently killed. And I just, no. Like, and it felt weird story-wise, too. Like, you have all this effort to try to calm them down. We're going to save you. And then, boom, he's gone. And the story moves on to something else. That felt a little weird story-wise. Like, what was the point?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess they did put a lot of work in developing also Credence as a character, too, to kill him off at the end of the film. Yeah, I don't know. I'm interested to see where that goes.
Yeah, and if he's not dead, I suppose it will not be as big a deal. But I, for right now, my position is I didn't really like it.
Mm-hmm.
I have two more things that I really didn't like about this film. And one of them is that I think that while I don't have a problem with the theme of child abuse, but I felt like in this film, it was very heavy-handed and over-the-top and almost just comical, puritanical type of nonsense. Like this idea of that this is what it looks like and this is what, you know, this is how it manifests is I don't think it's quite that simple. So it seems simplistic and heavy-handed. That's kind of where I'm at on that.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't really think about that much. Do you have any others?
I have one more, and that is I think that, you know, the things that we talked about, you know, Yates has strengths, but his weakness has always been every time, every single movie I've ever seen of him all in the Potterverse, his weakness is action. He doesn't do action well. He loves to do that connecting strand between the wands, which was only ever supposed to be between Harry's wand and Voldemort's wand. He did that multiple times he did it between Dumbledore and Voldemort's wand in the fifth movie. He did it again in other places that didn't make sense. And he did it a little bit here too, where they were dueling and these strands of light connected between the wands. And that's just not a thing. And it drives me nuts. And so that's an issue. And then otherwise, I feel like his action is somewhat incomprehensible, and I think that this film shows that he's gotten better, but it's still not great. That's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
I would partially disagree with that. I think he can tend to do some bad action sequence, but I think I would like point you back to Order of the Phoenix, and I love the duel between Voldemort and Dumbledore, even though it is non-canonical. And I think the wizard's duel we see in there when Sirius Black comes and rescues Harry from the Death Eaters in the Ministry of Magic, I think that's a fantastic action scene. I think he can do great action. And actually, in this film, I really liked the action sequence, especially in the end. I think the duels were good. And the sequence where the Obscurus is kind of boiling around inside the subway, and Newt and Graves are kind of having to keep, they have to keep apparating around to get away from it. I thought that was a really interesting and clever action sequence. I really enjoyed it. So I really didn't have a problem with the action.
Well, like I said, I think he's gotten better. You can cut this part out if you want, but I just have to say that the duel between Dumbledore and Voldemort in movie 5 is the worst. It is the worst example. It is such an example of everything that I hate about Yates in action, and specifically as it relates to Harry Potter films. And I'll tell you why, mostly because it was so good in the book. And Dumbledore's strength, like what he was really good at, was transfiguration. And so in the book, it's just so well done. And he has these things hopping off of their mantles and different things and protecting Harry and protecting, and it just worked out so well. And in the movie, it just wound up being I have so many issues with Michael Gambon's Dumbledore, where he's all yelly and just and like none of that worked for me. And in the book, he's so calm and reserved and just exuding the strength, and none of that is present in the movie. So that's a tangent, and I'm sorry, not sorry. I hate it. I hate it in the movie.
Okay, there's one moment where he does Gambon looks a little afraid, and that does bother me. I don't think he should be in that scene. But otherwise, I love that entire sequence. And I think the statues are kind of goofy, so...
Okay.
There you are. Well, back to Fantastic Beasts.
Yes, Fantastic.
One of the dislikes I had, not entirely a dislike, is I'm not entirely sure what to make of Queenie as a character. She appears to be around 30, but she acts kind of like a 14-year-old who's just discovered boys. And it was weird.
Well, I thought it went okay because her personality, you know, obviously kind of works this way. But also, I didn't think it was so much that she was a 14-year-old who just discovered boys as much as apparently in the United States, there's much more separation between magical and muggles or nomadges. And she's never, as she even said, she's never been around a nomad before. And she was sort of taken with this nomad and the idea of him being a nomad. And that was so it was like discovering nomadges for the first time. And so and she had somewhat of a childlike personality. And she, like I said, she had a lot of growing up to do as it was. And I think that we can say that we probably know people like that in real life sometimes. So that didn't bother me too much. And I liked her otherwise. And she had some – oh, she had these great insights late toward the end of the film when they're in the suitcase with Newt. I love that scene too. And I didn't have so much trouble with her character. But I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, I don't think she was a bad performance necessarily. And I could see her going interesting places. I just had a hard time getting a read on what exactly – her character was supposed to be and what, and so that it was just kind of a small annoyance, not a huge issue.
Yeah, no, I understand.
And what else? Do you have anything else you want to, any dislikes?
I don't think so. I think that kind of wraps it up for me. And unfortunately, I've only seen this movie 2 days ago, and so some of the stuff is probably still gelling, and I wish I would have had time to see it one more time because I really did enjoy, like, I enjoyed this movie so much. And that's kind of one of the things that I've never quite figured out how in my podcasting to work around this. Like, it feels weird to lead with your dislikes, but it also, you kind of hate ending on a downer. And it really makes it feel like you didn't like this movie. And I love this film. Like, I loved it a lot.
Yeah. And actually, an interesting thing, if you wouldn't mind discussing, is I've heard some complaints that this film doesn't appeal to non-fans. And, what do you think about that?
Are there any non-fans in the world?
Well, there's a couple of Death Eaters out there.
I hadn't thought about that. I can see that because it kind of expects you to know things. But I think you would enjoy it as a nomad, if I may use that term. as a muggle, I think you would enjoy it. But I don't think you would get the same satisfaction out of it. And I think it would be weird to ignore everything that we've known for the last, 98 or something, 97, 98, when the first book came out. I mean, so you're looking at basically 20 years. Like, I feel like it would be weird to do a movie that acted like you didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. I think it would be kind of the equivalent of coming in and watching like Avengers: Age of Ultron without having seen any of the previous MCU. I don't think it's fair to the filmmakers and storytellers to ask them to reintroduce us to this world with every film and tell a completely self-contained story. I don't think that really works with long-form storytelling. And I like the fact that they can build off the previously existing world and just show us new stuff. I think if you come to this story without having done your homework in a way, I think it's kind of your fault.
Yeah. And let's be honest too. I don't think there's that many people in the world who'd have no concept of what Harry Potter is. And most of them would probably be people who have this strange conception of, well, I don't want my children learning how to conjure demons or something. I think that if you're not a fan of Harry Potter, you're probably not going to go see this film regardless. So I think the way they approach it is fine. And I think that even if you only have a casual understanding of Harry Potter, I think this film would work for you just fine. Now, it's hard for me to say that definitively because I know every nook and cranny of the Potterverse. So I don't know. I could be off base.
Yeah, like I'm not going to even pretend I'm objective about these stories. For me, any time in Harry Potter, as long as it's not directed by Mike Newell, is great. And so, I also have almost encyclopedic knowledge of the book, so it's hard for me to imagine someone being confused by it. All right, let's move into our final thoughts. I'll let you go. What are your final thoughts on this film?
My final thoughts are that this film really, in a way that I didn't expect, captures kind of what I wanted from the Harry Potter universe. Even though I thought I wanted, and I would not object to something that comes after the Harry Potter story and the Harry Potter and Voldemort story, going before turns out it's just fine. And I loved it a lot. And I think there's a lot here. I think this is, if you want to consider it part of the Harry Potter film franchise, I think it's one of the better films in the franchise. I can't say which film is my favorite. I know which book is my favorite, but I can't say which film. It's hard to do.
Prisoner of Azkaban.
What's that?
Prisoner of Azkaban.
It's up there. Prisoner of Azkaban is up there. But I'd have to say... probably 6 is my favorite.
That one's amazing too. So.
It's really good. I tend to gravitate towards the more emotional story arcs, and that's, you know, there's so much, and it's so weird because you can't have 6 be your favorite without 7 finishing the story properly. But in any event, I think this is a fantastic entry to expand the universe, and I really look forward to seeing what's to come.
Yeah, I would agree with all that, and just add that I think a lot of the people who've been criticizing this film aren't looking at just how clever and subtle the world building is.
Yes.
And like just watching it again, I saw so many things. This film really rewards repeat viewings. There's everywhere, there's something going on that just expands the world. It just expands our knowledge of these characters. Like even in the background, you just see people doing certain things. It's all, there's so much to see here. And I think the storytelling is also very, very subtle and clever. I don't think it's nearly as clunky as most blockbusters tend to be. I think Rowling definitely, and Yates, I think they both definitely respect the audiences and don't spoon feed you. And so just as a person, as a film buff, I appreciated just all the technical craft and storytelling craft that was going on. And just as a Harry Potter fan, I love to be back in this world. I think it's a very funny movie. It's touching. There's really, really great characters. Some of the best we've had in the series. As leads, great acting. The direction is mostly good. I think Yates has a little trouble sometimes with CGI where he relies on it a bit too much, but that wasn't a huge problem. So just, if you're a Potter fan, it's definitely a must-see. And I look forward to seeing it again. I'm very fascinated to see where this story goes.
Agreed.
All right, I'll let you give you a chance to plug your stuff or wherever the people can find you online one last time.
Okay. You can find me on Twitter. I love to talk about these things and continue the conversation. So you can find me on Twitter. I am TJ Draper Pro there. And I do a podcast every week. Well, I'm not always on the podcast, but the podcast comes out every week. It's called Retake, and it's on nightowl.fm. And you can also follow that Twitter account, nightowlfm.
All right, and... if you get a chance, I would like to ask you all to go and rate and review us on iTunes and just subscribe and give us a review. That would definitely help us come up in the rankings, help people find us, and like us on Facebook. We love interacting with you on the page. If you have any suggestions of films that you think are underrated that you'd like to see us review, definitely shout them out. We might do them. And I'm also on Facebook as Gabriel Green. Feel free to send me a friend request. I'd like to thank you, TJ, again for coming on. It was really great having you on. I think it was a good discussion.
Oh, yeah, it was my pleasure. Anytime you want to talk about Harry Potter.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we hope you enjoyed this minisode, and we will see you later.